Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is September 30th, 2010, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 179, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a man without a title. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM.
Pew, 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 pew. Pew, 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 pew.
At macobserver.com.
I had to duck. I think I almost got hit that time.
It was pretty close. I think that last one.
Yeah.
The last one almost got you. I have a question for you.
Okay.
When you were a kid, did you watch the movie made from the book A Man Without a Country?
No, I didn't.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
All right. Well, it had a profound impact on me as a young man.
Did you feel like you were a man without a country, or at least
no,
a title?
I just thought it was unfair. I should revisit that story as an adult, see how I feel about it these days. Do you know the whole premise?
No, I. That's actually sad for me to say that because I was an English major in college.
It's a historical thing, if I'm not mistaken. Dude messes up. I can't remember if he actually committed treason or if he was ever actually convicted of committing treason, but he was basically thrown out of the country, out of the burgeoning U.S. This was early in the 19th century, and kept aboard military vessels. For, you know, like the next 20 years or something. And folks, it's been so long since I saw the movie and I never read the book. I may have gotten some of those details wrong. But the whole point is that he gets handed off from, you know, ship to ship as basically a floating prison.
Wow.
As punishment.
Wow. And having to spend years and years and years on a ship would be bad enough mm-hmm. in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But at that time...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that would be horrible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it had a profound impact on me. Like I said, I should revisit those details.
Is this why you never went into the Navy?
No.
Okay.
No.
I didn't go in because they didn't want me.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
My grandfather, did I tell that story? I already told that story. I won't tell the story again.
Yeah, and you've said just enough that if people really want to know, they can go and listen to back episodes and find it.
Indeed. All right. Well, we're getting off to a slow start here.
Yeah. Well, I bet it'll pick up.
We have a couple of exciting things to talk about. At least exciting to us.
Yeah, and that's better than exciting to no one at all.
It's true.
All right. I guess I should take us on it in the next part, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Google says it's the opposite of Apple, and Rim wants to take on Apple with its new Playbook tablet. And that means there's going to be plenty for us to talk about in this week's Context Machine.
Google CEO Eric Schmidt decided that he wanted to give us something to talk about this week, and so he opened his mouth and began speaking at an appearance at the TechCrunch Disrupt conference. We're so rude. Mr. Schmidt said a couple of things that Jeff and I will gleefully exploit for their comedic value. To wit, Mr. Schmidt posited that at some point, open technologies will allow developers to make browser-based apps that are just as powerful and slick as today's iPad apps. Never mind, of course, that by then iPad apps will have grown to take advantage of the same hardware and software developments that will have allowed browser-based apps to catch up to yesterday in the first place. The other fun thing that Mr. Schmidt said was in response to a question about his own company when asked to explain how Google was open. Rather than actually answer the question, Mr. Schmidt elected to say that Apple was closed, that the inverse of closed is open, and that therefore Google weighs the same as a duck. Boy. Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. We appreciate it.
You know, comedy like that just has to write itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, as expected, Research in Motion unveiled a new tablet this week, and the device is going to be called Playbook. Now, RIM's Playbook has a 7-inch display, it's 10 millimeters thick, it's powered by a dual-core 1 gigahertz processor, and as expected, it is also going to be running on the new operating system that's called BlackBerry Tablet OS, and that was built on technology acquired when RIM purchased QNX Software Systems earlier this year. Now, despite what the name suggests, RIM is positioning its new tablet in familiar territory, at least for them, and that's the enterprise market. Now, for one thing, it requires pairing with a BlackBerry to access the internet via a cellular signal, although it does also include built-in Wi-Fi. Now, RIM stressed that BlackBerry Tablet OS is, quote, an OS built for developers, unquote. And this contrasts with Apple's approach of designing devices for the end user. RIM has not announced pricing, but said that the Playbook would be released sometime in the first part of 2011.
And that sound means that it's time for the Context Machine. That's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
And I think with just two stories, we still have plenty to talk about.
It's true. Well, we limited it to two because we had so much to talk about.
And we have a hard time shutting up.
Yeah, it's that's true.
Yeah.
You seldom need the excuse of additional stories to talk about to take up lots of your valued time.
Yeah, so you're welcome.
Well, all right. Let's start with the first one.
Okay. So, you know, Eric Schmidt, bless his little heart, he really went to a lot of trouble to give us something to talk about.
He did. I mean, so first of all, we like Google. Right. Can I speak for you there, Jeff?
Sure. I do like Google.
We like Google. We love the Google search engine. I personally have some reservations about just how much knowledge and information they're accumulating about all of us, but whatever. We like the company. Eric Schmidt is brilliant, substantially more successful than either Jeff or I, actually, than both of us combined.
That's true. Yeah.
It's very true. And, you know, he's super smart, and that company has got some brainiacs working there. I know some of them. They are smart people. I mean, really smart people. But he sometimes, he shouldn't be allowed out without a minder. Mr. Schmidt, you have to stop talking now.
You know, once he gets going, he gets going. So I'm thinking his minder's going to have to carry like a little low voltage taser. So when he starts talking a little too much, I can just jab him in the side and hit the button.
He can just wear some kind of,
a collar,
or something around his wrist or some other part of his body. And his minder can just sort of give him a reminder zapper.
Okay, the sad thing is I was picturing one of the old classic Star Trek episodes where Captain Kirk ends up with a collar on and the hot alien babe has a collar on. They do the wrong things and they get zapped.
That's right. That's right. It would be, someone would say, "What's that?" And someone else would say, "That's the sound of silence."
So making a very meek effort to try and go back on topic. You remember when Apple was saying that web apps were going to be the ultimate thing and that's how everyone should code for the iPhone?
Mm-hmm.
And now we have the App Store.
Well, true. All right. So go ahead and finish that thought.
All right.
So what's your conclusion there?
My conclusion is if Google thinks things will follow that same model, even though we have technological advances that are making web apps more capable, it's still possible that by the time the web apps get to the point where they're that capable, the native apps will have advanced to the point where they're so much more capable that people will still be in the same position they are now, where they tend to prefer native apps over web apps.
Right. And that's certainly the okay, so because let's back up. He's right. At some point, everything from hardware performance to new developments in software to ever faster wireless networks will result in browser-based apps of that day being able to be just as powerful and slick, to feel just as good as iPad apps do today, right? I mean, he's right about that.
That's true. You know, the biggest problem I have with web apps is that you need to have an internet connection to use them.
Well, that's true. But then a lot of the useful apps for any kind of iOS device also need some kind of internet connection. So, I mean, that's a two-edged sword at the very least.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a lot more you can do with a native app when you don't have an internet connection.
Yeah, depending on the app, you know, like games.
Yes, anything
that's going to download the content or not. You know, of course, there are many apps that don't need that kind of connection.
Right, and a lot of the apps that do need a connection can also cache information. As an example, I use SimpleNote on my iPad. Mm-hmm. To write notes. And so everything stays synchronized with the SimpleNote cloud server. When I don't have an internet connection, everything that I'm writing in my notes is there.
Right. And if it was a browser-based app, you just wouldn't be able to access it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. And of course, it can be argued that he's looking ahead to a day where wireless connectivity is even more ubiquitous than landlines were 30 years ago.
Yeah,
and that is a legitimate argument to be made.
Sure. So there is that, but unless something really dramatic happens, I'm just having a hard time accepting that people will prefer to do everything in web apps.
I agree. I personally hate doing anything in a web app. I hate it. I understand that what he's talking about is that day when the things that make me hate them today are no longer an issue. For instance, having to wait for whatever you've done to make it to the server and back. That sure. Whole rendering thing versus, you know, having native rendering that's local only. I mean, all those things admittedly can change. Today I hate them. I don't see that changing very much. But then we still come back to your original point, which is the fact that native apps will have progressed during that same period of time.
Right.
And comparing what may be coming five, you know, 4, 5, 6, 10 years from now to what we can do today is, to me, stupid. It's just not, it's not sound logic. It's not a sound argument to make.
No, it isn't. And I'm going to throw another little wrench in his whole theory, which is dealing with multitasking applications. So is the idea that you're going to have a bunch of tabs open in a web browser and you're going to jump between those for all the different applications you're using?
Well, I mean, already today you can, you know, you've got the web app for YouTube that's savable as as an icon on your iPhone home screen.
Right. But when you launch it, doesn't that launch into mobile Safari?
Yeah, it does. But, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, we may be dealing with having web apps being able to run as their own browser instance.
Actually, we already have that.
Sure. But I'm saying that could fit into the equation.
Yeah, so that – okay. So I could see where that could fit into the equation. He might be a brilliant man, but he's going to have to work a little harder to convince me that web apps are going to be the choice of end users in the future.
And I will add very strongly that his being enamored so much with I do not agree with him on how enamored he is with open technologies versus proprietary systems.
Yeah, well, take a look at Google's open technologies in Android right now. And that market is getting so fragmented because there are so many other companies, the developers, like smartphone developers, that are doing their own thing with Android. And everyone's opening up their own Android app store now. And it's just so fragmented. I don't see that as a good option.
Yeah, one of our readers sent me a link to a piece about a non-Apple guy talking about why he was dropping his Android unit. And one of the things that he mentioned, he basically set about to use Android and Android only in order to try it out. And after several weeks of it, he ditched it. And one of the reasons was because Verizon had, he said, and I don't know the veracity of this, but he said that there were icons for apps strewn across seven different screens of desktop space, and they couldn't remove them. And even when he downloaded a third party utility whose job was to kill running apps, they would restart themselves.
That's just horrible. But I've heard a lot of people saying that they're really displeased with all of the crapware that's being pre-installed, especially on Verizon's Android phones.
Yeah.
It's like the old days with Windows machines where there'd just be a bunch of junk. Well, it's still to a degree on some of the new machines. There's a lot of junk installed, and at least on Windows, you had at least a slim chance of getting the stuff off.
Right.
But on Android, because the cell carriers are bundling the apps with their OS installation, they're part of the install.
Right. You've got to root your device to get rid of these things sometimes.
Right. And that's not something for the average user.
No. And I think that for Android to really be a compelling solution, not to be successful, because I think that Android is going to be successful in terms of numbers, if not necessarily in terms of profits. But for it to be a compelling solution, I think that someone, preferably Google, is going to have to take a hold of it and develop a phone that they control and that is so compelling that they can force the same kind of terms that Apple did, where the carriers have to take it as is.
I think you're right. And I fear that everything has progressed to the point where they won't be able to do that now.
Well, they could. At any time, anybody could do that, though.
Yes, but Android is out there in so many different versions that I can't see Google at this point being able to rein it all in.
I don't mean rein it in, man. I mean just do one and then lock it down and let the cat's out of the bag. You're totally right.
Yeah. Right?
Android is out there and is going to be out there in a jillion iterations.
Okay, I totally get what you're saying. And you know, when Google made their own phone, that was it, the N1?
The Nexus one, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, the Nexus. That was actually a surprisingly nice phone.
Yeah, and it's actually highly valued today because only like 60,000 of them or so sold.
Right, and I wonder, is that because even though it's actually a cool phone, was it not selling well enough, or did or what Google said at the time, which was, look, we just wanted people to see what this is, and we think it was a success. It did its job, and so we can stop now.
No, that's PR speak. They, as I understand it, they sold 60, maybe 80,000 units, and I think that the real problem with them was that you had to pay full price. So there weren't any proper subsidy packages out there that keep the cost of the iPhone to something approaching reasonable.
If you agreed to buy one that was locked to T-Mobile, it was subsidized price. But if you wanted it unlocked, which of course is what most people wanted when they were buying an Android, or the Nexus, yeah, you had to pay full price.
Yeah, I don't even think the T-Mobile thing lasted very long.
I don't think it did.
I don't think there was. And plus, T-Mobile is one of the smallest U.S. carriers.
Right.
So I mean, they needed to have some kind of major subsidy through one of the large carriers, and it needed to be sold in. I mean, you know, it was only sold online. You know, if Apple had only offered the iPhone on the online Apple Store, it never would have done as well as it did.
No, it wouldn't have. Now, Now the Apple comparison. I think it's funny that you said that one of the problems with the Nexus was that it was unsubsidized.
Mm-hmm.
And people said that was going to be one of the things that killed the iPhone when it originally launched, because it wasn't subsidized.
Well, it wasn't as subsidized.
Right. So
it was subsidized, but we were paying for the hardware, and AT&T was paying the profits through the revenue sharing.
Yeah. So first generation was what? I don't think it was subsidized, because it was like $600 for a phone.
It was $399 or $499. And on top of that, AT&T did the revenue sharing thing. So okay. it seems like, I mean, the first generation of iPhone was a very expensive device from the hardware standpoint.
Yeah, I remember it cost a lot of money. Most expensive phone I've ever bought.
But had Apple not had the revenue sharing deals in place with AT&T and then eventually the other carriers globally, they would have had to have sold it for even more to have the kind of gross margins that they need to operate. Does that make sense?
Right.
So that's why I said it was less subsidized than today's is. But it was subsidized. It just wasn't as much of a subsidy as we see today. Plus, Apple's been able to bring the cost down a lot.
Right. And okay, yeah. And so then the 3G, 3GS, and 4 have been – or have had much higher subsidies.
Right.
Right. All right. I'll accept that.
So, yeah. So then we have the other thing that he said, which I think is just super bizarro world.
Yeah. Well, so answering the question how Google is open by saying because Apple is closed is, I mean, does he not have an idea of how Google really is open, or is he thinking that he really, really needs to try and slam Apple in some way?
Well, so there are so many things about this that are weird. For one thing, he's basically allowing Apple to define his own company.
And that's just crazy.
That is crazy, and it's weird because you know, this isn't – they're not really even competing, like, say, as much as Google and Microsoft or Apple and Microsoft are. And to let another company – to define your own company's very existence when you were as rich and powerful and dominant as Google is in their markets – is in fact weird, bizarre.
Yes, it's. I was very confused as to why he would answer in the way he did.
So, and let's tell our listeners what he actually said. Shall I read from our piece on that a little bit?
Sure, that sounds great.
So he was asked to basically explain how his company was open, and he said it's easier to understand by opposition, and the opposition in this case being Apple. Going back to quoting, the easiest comparison to do today is the Apple iOS model. And he noted that said model does indeed work very well. So he wasn't actually poo-pooing Apple's model. But he says, you know, hey, everybody, look at that. Quote, you have to use their development tools, their hardware, their software. When you submit an application, they have to approve it. That would not be open. So the inverse would be open, unquote. And therefore, unstated, Google is open. I mean, how does that pass even the most rudimentary logic test?
Well, it doesn't, and I think it's only appropriate that I point out, because if I don't, our listeners will, that when he made this statement, it was after Apple had already relaxed its developer guidelines so that you can use pretty much any development tool you want as long as your final app meets Apple's guidelines.
Right. And, you know, so for that one little point he's making, he was wrong. But I think that wasn't his central argument.
Right. But I know if I don't bring it up, someone else will. So
there. Right.
Now it's out and on the table.
There it is. Look at it. Ha ha. But to say that Apple, because, all right, and let's break this down, because at the heart of his argument is the fact that Apple is closed. Well, yeah, Apple is closed.
Apple, and it's a business model that has been working pretty well for quite a while for right. Apple.
Right. The Apple does a closed proprietary system where they provide the software, they provide the hardware, and at least on the iOS devices, they set the rules. They set the rules about what we can do with it, and they set the rules for how developers can develop for it. That is, in fact, a closed system, just like Eric Schmidt says.
Yes. But
to say, so the inverse would be open, and thus implying that Google is somehow the inverse of that, is ridiculous, because Google itself has many things which are secret and proprietary.
That's a good point.
PageRank. Their algorithm they use for deciding the relevance of search terms, that's secret. Their ad rates, the very ad rates are secret.
And actually, I think that there's parts of Android OS that they keep secret as well.
Well, there certainly should be. I don't know about that.
And I think like some of the apps that they've developed for Android OS are very closed.
Yeah. So, I mean, and this is not to say that Apple and Google are both closed or anything. It is such a ridiculous leap to say, look at Apple. Whatever the opposite of what Apple does is open, and therefore we're open. I mean, it makes no sense.
Well, the big point that I see in all this, which is the one that you noticed, how crazy is it that he's letting Apple define what his company is?
It is crazy. I mean, just go ahead and talk about how you're open. Go ahead and say, well, Android is open source. Go ahead and say that lots of our APIs are free for anyone to use. Go ahead and say that our stuff is free. You know, go ahead and make those arguments. Don't say, well, you know, don't look at me, look at them.
You know, can you imagine if this happened, say, like in the soda pop industry, mm-hmm. so Coke and Pepsi, mm-hmm. and someone asks the CEO of Coke, how are you different from Pepsi? And he says, well, let me tell you about Pepsi.
Yeah.
And
how are you different from Pepsi? Well, Pepsi uses high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
Or you know, Pepsi's bottles are square.
Or they use three inks. We use two.
Yeah. I mean, it makes no sense. So we actually had a lot of fun with it. Jeff made an awesome graphic for me. So this reminds me of that Monty Python sketch where Sir Bedivere is basically examining the notion of whether or not a woman is a witch or not.
Right.
And he goes through all sorts of, you know, comparisons. And eventually what they come to is that since you burn witches and wood burns and wood floats, if the woman weighs the same as a duck, she's a witch. That's a massively abbreviated and substantially less funny version of the sketch.
She turned me into a newt. I got better. I got better.
And so, to me, it's, and so he ends up weighing the woman. She, turns out she weighs the same as a duck, which is funny in and of itself. And so they go off to Brenner.
And the most brilliant part, right after they all decide she's a witch because she weighs as much as a duck, Connie Booth, who plays the woman, turns to the camera and goes, "It's a fair cop." With a carrot tied to her face as a nose.
Brilliant sketch. If you haven't, if you have somehow managed to go throughout your life without watching the Holy Grail, you should fix that.
Yes. It's your homework.
So anyway, so we put a graphic in there. Jeff was kind enough to make it for me where we've got a set of scales and we've got Steve Jobs' head on one side and we've got a duck on the other side and they weigh roughly the same. And so therefore, Google must be open.
Or a witch.
Or both, yeah. All right. Anyway, that's just weird.
The whole thing
is weird. His logic is weird. His presentation is weird. His allowing Apple to define his own company is weird. His assertions are weird. The whole thing is just weird.
I hope when he left the stage, someone else from his company said, "Eric, dude, really? What were you thinking?"
Well, what they were thinking was,
yeah.
That's what they were thinking. Yeah, okay. So you know what's not weird? Text Expander. Nukes.
Oh, Text Expander. You're right. That's not weird.
And I was totally
thinking newts, but you're right. Text Expander, which is an absolutely brilliant application.
Mm-hmm. And it's made by Smile, the newly renamed
Smile Software. Yes.
And there's a version out now. Of course, it's been out for the Mac forever. And now there's a version for iPod Touch, iPhone, and iPad called Expander Touch. Although it's called Expander Touch, Text Expander Touch. But if you search for it on the App Store, it's just Text Expander.
Yeah, it's the full name shows up when you hit the page, but when you do the search, just search for Text Expander.
Yeah, no, the full name doesn't show up.
It doesn't?
No,
I thought
just,
it did.
It's just, I'm going to check. Because, you know, a lot of names, as I discovered as I was writing Incredible iPad Apps for Dummies with Bob Levitis, a lot of names change.
All right.
Quickly.
Well,
yeah, it's just
you look that. Oh, okay.
But if you go to their site, it's called Text Expander Touch. But that's okay because it's a great app.
It is. All right. So if you're not familiar with what this does, and it works the same. Essentially on the Mac as it does on iOS devices. So you create your own custom little abbreviations, and when you type those abbreviations, they automatically expand out into full words or phrases. So it makes it very easy to type complex things without introducing errors. It makes it very easy and saves a lot of time if you have to type the same things over and over to be able to do it just by typing a few letters as opposed to typing the entire thing.
Like your signature or your address or I know that one of the things you use it for a lot, Jeff, is for adding our affiliate code to the end of iTunes links.
Yeah, exactly. And it works fantastic. I just type it's actually 4 characters, and then it takes the actual link and puts in all the affiliate stuff and drops it exactly where I need it to go.
And so now with iPod, I'm sorry. Oh, I don't know why I'm doing that. With iOS devices, it can't run the same way that it does on the Mac, because on the Mac it's basically just an application that's running and watching what you're doing.
Right, but on iOS devices, you either have to use the text editor that's in the Text Expander application, or you need to use applications that have built-in Text Expander support.
Right. So you can type something out in Text Expander and, you know, copy paste it and run it to whatever app you want. Or they've released an API that allows other developers to tap into Text Expander's abilities from within those other apps.
and it works really well.
Yeah. There's about 40 of them now, I think.
And more coming along all the time.
More coming along all the time. Indeed. Indeed. So now, just to remind you, the company used to be called Smile on My Mac, and they've been a sponsor of ours for a long time. And this summer, they changed their name to simply Smile Software.
Which makes sense, because they're writing iOS apps in addition to the Mac apps.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's very smart. And then we have the playbook.
Yeah.
What do you think? Are we going to pile on this thing? Are we going to call it a piece of crap?
I'm not going to call it a piece of crap because I haven't seen it yet. And I'd like to point out that neither has anyone else.
Well, someone has.
No, I don't think anyone has. My Jedi instincts tell me that they actually really don't have the hardware together yet.
No, I think they've got some prototypes.
I don't know. Maybe.
It's a fair argument.
Okay, so if they have prototypes, they have not left the lab at all, and I think that when they were showing the playbook on stage, mm-hmm. when they showed it off, I think that was a mock-up. I don't even think it was a prototype, because they actually didn't do anything with it, and the video they showed never actually showed it until the very end, and so. They really haven't shown us the device. They've shown us the concepts and what they expect the device to do.
Right.
And so if it lives up to that, I think that'll be great.
Yeah, I definitely will not call it a piece of crap based on what we've seen so far. And I know that may surprise people to hear that we're not denigrating it, that we're not trying to pile on. But Jeff and I both think that RIM has a device which may be able to play really well to their installed base.
Yeah, I think this has the potential to be very attractive to BlackBerry users, especially in the business market.
Right. Right. So for like one of the things it'll do is it'll display content that's on your BlackBerry. But on it. It'll access content and then basically allow you to manipulate it on the device.
You know, when I heard that, and here comes a little bit of bagging, my first thought was, oh, Palmfolio. Yeah, that went over really well.
Well, but I think that there are some people that would like that. So the benefit to that is that it allows you to, let's say, to do your email. Right, your ever important enterprise email.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to do it on a device with a better interface and a better form factor, or a larger form factor at the very least.
That was the idea behind the Folio too.
But the data remains secure on the BlackBerry, thus meaning that that's one less device that IT wonks have to worry about. That's totally playing to the IT security guys, because the information is not being stored on the playbook. It's remaining stored on the BlackBerry itself.
Okay, and that's a very compelling feature for IT departments. You're absolutely right. However, I'm worried that they have overhyped the product and that what they ship won't be able to live up to expectations.
But,
and even if it's a really good device, but it doesn't live up to the expectations that people have now, it's still not going to do well.
I don't really think they set expectations all that high.
I think they set them pretty high.
How?
Okay, so when you watch the video, I mean, everything is so fast and so fluid and so snappy.
But it's got a gig of RAM and a dual-core 1 gigahertz processor. It's going to be a lot faster than an iPad.
I hope so. But, you know, without seeing it in action, I don't know. I'm holding out reservation for this because I'm not convinced that RIM is going to deliver what they showed. I think they will try. but I don't know if they can actually deliver what they were talking about.
Well, I'm speechless.
Wow.
I think that it may be this. I might have a hang up going the other way. My hang up may be that RIM is, you know, it's RIM, HP, and Apple at this point that are offering proprietary solutions in this space, in the smartphone tablet space.
Well, actually, it's Apple. HP and RIM will be in the near future.
Okay, so I'll say it again. So it's Apple, HP, and RIM that are playing. Well, no. BlackBerry is today. BlackBerry has a proprietary smartphone.
I'm sorry. I was thinking just about the tablet. You're right. RIM is totally playing in the proprietary market. You're absolutely right.
And I believe that proprietary solutions, by and large, can usually... too many caveats, offer a better user experience than any kind of open licensing system.
I agree. You know, I think the likelihood of success is higher.
Right. The fewer fingers in the pot or in the pie or whatever, the better it's going to taste, in my opinion. And I'm not a BlackBerry device user, and I think that RIM stumbled when they started working on a touchscreen way too late, and they rushed it to market, and I don't think their touchscreen BlackBerries have been, you know, worthy of much of anything. But
no, and they didn't live up to the hype from the videos that they showed before the products were released.
True. Okay, that's a great point. But looking at their phones, there are still legions of CrackBerries out there. And they sell more devices than Apple does. They're selling their market share has decreased, but they've actually increased the number of units that they've been selling since the iPod came out.
Right. Yeah. And another important thing to remember is that a lot of the BlackBerry users that are out there right now are very pleased with their devices, mm-hmm. and have no incentive to switch to an iPhone or an Android phone, because what they need is being provided to them just the way they want.
And the people that I've personally met here in Silicon Valley who have not been happy with their iPhones have been people who weren't working in, you know, as drones in an enterprise market or salesmen. In other words, they've been consumers. The consumers that wanted much more of what an iPhone or an Android device has to offer.
Okay.
Yeah, those are the people that I've personally met who have been unhappy with the BlackBerries. There are lots and lots of BlackBerry owners who are super pleased with their device, and you know, people who you know, can't get over the idea of not having a physical keyboard and stuff. I mean, they have a really big, strong core audience, and they've been serving that audience very, very well. Where they've screwed up is when they tried to offer their version of an iPhone, touch interface. But the thing is, they've got something new in their arsenal, and that's this technology that was developed by QNX Software Systems.
Right.
And they were smart enough to go, they did just what Apple did with Mac OS X. They went somewhere else and found an operating system to replace their own.
You know, and HP has done the same.
And HP did the same thing. That's absolutely true. So I know that I have a bias towards the fact that they're offering a proprietary solution. And to me, that makes me think that they can maybe do it. But I also look at how they're pitching this thing, and they're not pitching it at the same people that the iPad is pitched at. They're not trying to offer an iPad killer. They're trying to offer another device that they can sell to the enterprise and keep the enterprise from going to iPad, because, you know, once you go to iPad, you're going to go to iPhone too.
Right. And actually, that's a really smart marketing move on their part.
I agree. If they had tried to offer an iPad killer, I think they'd be laughed out of town, because they're not going to be able to do it.
I agree. Now, I'm curious to see how this plays out when the playbook hits the market, mm-hmm. because I think there's a lot of people out there that are in the consumer end that aren't getting that this is marketed towards the enterprise level, and they're going to go into their favorite stores where they can buy BlackBerry gear, and they're going to buy playbooks, and they're going to look at this as a device that they can use as an iPad alternative.
Right.
And then I think they're going to be disappointed.
Unless they get a bunch of apps out there, they are going to be disappointed, as a matter of fact. Yeah. And yeah. But I kind of wonder how many people will be looking for looking at the playbook. Of course, with that name, so let's actually go ahead and criticize a couple of things. First of all, BlackBerry Tablet OS is like just the worst name ever.
Yeah, I think they should have used a different name. Although, if they're going just for the enterprise market, calling it BlackBerry Tablet OS keeps that name in front of the people that they want to be seeing that name.
Right.
So, but for the general public, not such a good choice.
And if that's the case, why call this device that's aimed at enterprise the Playbook?
That's the bigger problem I see.
I mean, it's, you know, you can, if you want to go sports with, you know, a playbook, or if you want to go a book that you can play with, either way, it's neither connotation is appropriate for the market that they seem to be targeting.
Now, another thing, I don't know if playbook is a term that's commonly used outside of the United States in the sports
Well, that world. Doesn't matter, though, because it has the other connotation, too, though.
Right. But, you know, I'm just thinking, outside the United States, will people look at this and think it's a toy because they only have the one connotation for it?
Maybe. That's very possible. And I also – I have to laugh. You know, I pointed this out in our coverage of this thing. They had a whole little subsection of the press release that was titled An OS Built for Developers. And it just – it floored me. It floored me because it was like everything that makes Apple products awesome – and everything that keeps everybody else's products from being as awesome, sort of just right there, just, you know, writ large.
So it's like they're the opposite of Apple. Oh my God, they're a duck.
They must be open too. Which, by the way, they're not.
No, they're not.
And it's interesting to me because, you know, Microsoft has always done the same thing. They've always built their OSs for developers or for the content providers or for the people selling software. You know, they've always built their operating systems for everybody but the end user. At least that's been my feeling.
That's the impression that I've had too.
And so here's BlackBerry doing the same kind of thing, which, by the way, I think that the BlackBerry itself was built not for the end user, but was built for the IT departments.
Oh, sure.
So again, it's playing to their strong suit, right?
Right. And well, I think that Rim drove that point home quite clearly when they decided they wanted to start making, I'm doing air quotes, consumer BlackBerries. Because clearly before, the devices were geared just at the enterprise, at the business market, and they were designed to be set up and managed by IT departments.
Right. 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 And so now they've got an OS built for developers. And to me, that if there's any one thing that made me want to never, ever use one of these things, it was reading that subheading. An OS built for developers. I don't want an OS built for developers. Now, if I was a developer, I don't want an OS built for developers. I want an OS that's built for end users so that I could develop things for it that I can turn around and make some money on.
Yeah. What I want is an OS built for end users, an SDK built for developers.
There you go. There you go. Well, so by and large, I think that the BlackBerry is going to be – I'm sorry, the Playbook is going to be a moderate success. It won't sell anywhere near the units that the iPad's going to sell, but I don't think that they're even – I don't think they have those kinds of goals for it in the first place. I think that it'll keep some enterprise sales – from going to Apple and keep them in the BlackBerry family, and it may even be able to grow the tablet market without taking number sales away from Apple.
That's very possible, and you know, even though I did some bagging on Playbook. I really do hope it's successful, because the more competition we have in the new tablet world that Apple created, the better off we will all be as consumers.
As consumers and users. Both.
Yeah. I think that the Playbook will not be a major competitor for the iPad.
No.
I think that the webOS tablets that HP will be coming out with have a higher likelihood of being head-to-head competitors with the iPad.
Yeah, and that's funny, because we talked about talking about HP saying that they don't want to emulate Apple. And we decided that we had enough to say about these other two topics. But Jeff and I are both very excited to see HP come up with some webOS products.
Yeah, I am really looking forward to seeing these things come out and getting my hands on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that they'll be good competitors for the iPad.
I really hope so too. It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if HP found that there wasn't much of a consumer. Matter of fact, I'll make this prediction that we're going to be really excited about whatever they're going to come out with and being able to check it out, but that HP isn't going to find a big interest in consumers with either webOS smartphones or webOS tablets, but that HP will find ways to integrate them into their enterprise solutions, and that they will basically de-emphasize the consumer end of that business potential. I hate to say it, but that's my prediction. And it makes me a little sad.
Yeah, I hope you're wrong.
So do I.
Because really, if that's the way HP's webOS tablets go, it'll be HP and RIM competing for the enterprise tablet market.
Right.
And then Apple gets everything else.
Right. Well, it'll be HP and RIM, and then whatever Chrome OS or Android devices that, you know, are pieces of crap that are going to get the streets too.
They're going to be minor players. So those would be like just the little chum fish that are fighting over whatever they can get. And then we'll have the big names that have the true market share.
Yeah, and for the record, I think there's more chance of Microsoft being able to bring a tablet to market that can go toe-to-toe with Apple than any kind of Android device ever.
You know, I don't know if Microsoft really can come to market with a tablet that truly goes toe-to-toe with the iPad. However, I can see them bringing something to market and using their massive existing market share to just slowly chip away and hammer away at the rest of the market. So I don't think it'll be a good competing product, but I think they'll still be able to manage to get a reasonable share of the market.
Maybe. Well, please note that I said that they've got more of a chance. I don't actually expect them to do it.
Okay.
I just think they have more of a chance than whatever Zomigod tablet Android products come out.
Yeah, and I think Microsoft will have a reasonable market share. It won't be what they want, and they won't surpass the iPad. But I think just simply because of their sheer size and their ability to do like they did with the Xbox.
Yep, keep throwing money at it.
Yeah, they'll just keep throwing money at it. And the Xbox is a nice product, but they had to just dump so much money and lose so much initially to be able to get the market share.
Yep. Yep, that's true.
And they could do the same thing with tablets.
Yep. They could. They might. They won't, but they could.
Yeah.
All right, take us out. Oh, we're going to be at MCE.
We are. We're going to be at MCE on Saturday, the 2nd of October.
Mm-hmm.
And what a coincidence. Smile Software is going to be there too.
They are. And we're doing a panel with Adam Christensen, who is on our team at TMO.
And he also does the MacCast.
The MacCast, yeah. He's a great guy. So we're doing a panel on Saturday morning, and then we're going to have a little booth. Come by and meet us. Say hi. And we look forward to chatting with you. And I actually intend to be more awake than I was last year.
You know, but you were a trooper, because you were there and you stayed awake all day.
Yep.
I'm proud of you, Brian.
Yay, yay me, I'm all grown up, sort of, kind of, but not really. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, come by, we'll see you there.
All right. And so, all right, so this is the part where I go, if you have anything to comment on, add a question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. That would be twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can find Jeff on Ping, too. And you can find me on Ping.
That's right. We're both on Ping.
Both on Ping. And on Twitter, I'm TM O'Brien. That's Brian with a Y, all one word. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Trapped by lies that we both know. I can't see.